Welcome to The Catholic Arsonist.
Are you going to give us a whole rundown on your homily today?
My homily today was... What was the gospel? Jesus sent them out.
Mm-hmm. Don't take anything with you.
I mean, yeah, we can talk about that. Maybe it's like our launch point.
So do you want to lead?
You're going to lead. I'm going to intro and you're going to lead.
Okay, great.
Hello.
Last week.
That better. So much better.
That is better.
Oh, Father Andrew.
Okay.
What would I do without you?
Ready?
Yeah. Ready.
Everybody okay?
Doing great.
Okay.
Okay, great.
Do this.
Welcome back to The Catholic Arsonist. Maybe you can tell by the ambient noise, but we are outside today because it's such a lovely day. So you will hear leaves rustling, dogs barking, car doors closing, and maybe children screaming on the playground.
It's going to be beautiful.
Birds chirping. It's the first day of fall. Did you know that?
Uh-huh. Today. Emmeline's been reminding
yesterday,
me.
Yesterday. The 21st.
No, today is the first day of fall.
What was yesterday then?
The 21st night of September.
The day
do you
before.
Remember? I thought yesterday would have been... It's always the 21st.
That's when
March
the solstice
21st.
Is. This is the first day.
Oh. My calendar said today was the first day of fall, so of course I trusted.
Well, what's the first day of winter? December 21st or 22nd?
The solstice is on the 21st, so the first official full day of winter would be the 22nd.
I don't believe anything anymore.
We shall shut this down.
Burn it down.
I think that's science, but I don't know. I don't know everything.
Science.
Okay. Well, anyway, it's a lovely day, that's for sure. And what we're here to talk about is...
Sarcasm.
Well, that's what Shayna wants to talk about exclusively, and I think we'll get there eventually.
We certainly will.
What we'll start with is today's gospel. We're recording this on Wednesday, and today's gospel was about Jesus sending out his apostles two by two. Tells them, take no food for the journey, take nothing for the journey, no rucksack, no whatever. No second tunic. And then, like, they go and they start performing healings and exorcisms and things like that. And what's amazing about it is just that they've been watching Jesus do this for such a long time. And it was never Jesus' intention that he would be the only one doing it. He was going to give that authority, that power to others, first to his apostles and then to others beyond them. And like, what's miraculous about it, what's so cool, is that these people aren't the Lord, but the Lord's given them powers. They have their own personalities, they have their own pasts, they have their own relationships, and they get to now do the things that the Lord has been doing, in their own words, with their own speech, in their own manner. Each of them, there's 12 different persons. Each of them would look a little bit different in its manifestation. But all of them were vehicles, instruments of Jesus's saving power in the world. And then we didn't hear about it in the gospel. Then they come back and they're all hype. They're like, you, Jesus, you wouldn't believe what we did. We were casting out demons in your name. I mean, and that is like scriptural. And so what's just so cool is that they've been living like a horizontal life, like not worldly in that sense, but like they haven't been using divine power.
Yeah.
And now their life looks totally different because like the words that they speak cast out demons. You know, the words that they speak, people are healed.
Mm-hmm.
And so just to say, and this is where we'll start off, is you... Listener, you are an agent of the gospel. You are a vehicle or an instrument of the gospel. And even that quote from St. Teresa of Avila, like, Christ has no feet on earth but yours, no hands on earth but yours, no mouth on earth but yours. Like, Jesus has never spoken to me, but I've heard his voice through the others, you know. I've never touched the flesh of Jesus, but people have given me hugs that have been extremely healing, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so your personality, your gifts, your relationships and everything like that are a vehicle and instrument to the saving mission of Jesus in the world.
Yeah. I love it.
Or not.
Or not.
And
or
that's
not.
That's the problem of this. That's the crux. It's like, sure. Are you actually capable of transmitting the gospel, or is your personality, is something about you an obstacle or a hindrance to it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really enjoy this topic of conversation, and we're going to dive into it more, but this is sort of what we're discussing today, is sort of at the intersection of this twofold statement that Jesus gives to the disciples, well, Peter and Andrew, I guess, initially, but come after me. That's the first part, like, come follow me. And the second part is, I will make you fishers of men. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us live in the realm of come follow me, and we're sort of content with just being followers. And that's, as Father's mentioning in the gospel today, that's sort of where the disciples were. They were like, it's clear he is the Messiah. We believe in this. And we are going to follow him around as he's performing all these miracles and everything. And he is the Lord. He's the one that's come to save us. But then at a certain point, it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You're going to make me do it too. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not make like force, but actually transform me in such a way that I'm invited into the same saving work that you perform. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't do it without their consent. And so I think too, what we're speaking about today, being formed humanly, which we'll dive into more, but there's something about us consenting to those changes, that maturing taking place within us, so that we might be better hands and feet of Christ on earth. We might be better instruments of the gospel, and not obstacles to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So. I think a good thing to remember is that when you were talking, like, they went out and used their words and they were like healing people. It's sometimes difficult to remember that the apostles were just like regular people, you know, I got to hang out with Jesus all day. And you're like, we are those regular people. Like, mm-hmm. They can do it. We can do it.
Yeah.
So it's always, it always gives me hope. I'm like, I'm just a regular person, but I could do great things too. I'm a human.
Anytime I like call my guy friends out on things, one of my friends always says, I am but a man. Like, I am only a man. I'm like, come on.
The first time I was kind of introduced to this idea was when I first showed up at seminary, and they started talking about hygiene, which was never really a problem for me. Like,
you were a teenage boy at some point. Hygiene was an issue for you.
Okay, yeah, I used, but like, I got over that very quickly, and then I started using deodorant and showering regularly, and like,
amen,
combing my hair and whatever, you know, needs to happen. But some guys who showed up at seminary didn't have that, you know, those virtues. So then they'd get on these guys all the time, like, and they would say, look, you're shabby and you need to like shower.
Because, a little rough around the edges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you're not approachable. Like, mm-hmm. people can't. But that wasn't my particular issue. But my particular issue was that my tongue cut like a knife. And it's like, I'd have to go and apologize to people all the time for saying mean things. It's like, okay, well, now I got to learn.
You look clean, but nobody wants to be around you.
Yeah, exactly. Like, every time Andrew's here, like, he hurts somebody's feelings. Like, okay, well, then we should probably work on that so that my speech isn't an obstacle.
Sure.
But then the deeper thing about speech, and eventually we'll get to speech, but is that something even interior needs to be purified. Jesus says it's not what's outside that defiles a man. It's what comes out from within that defiles a man. So the interior purification. So
So I don't know if we've clarified. We want to talk today about human formation.
Yeah.
And that term itself, I think, I don't know if this is its origin, but it comes from, what's that letter John Paul II writes? I will give you shepherds.
Yeah. Pastores dabo vobis.
Sure. I will give you shepherds. And he's initially talking about seminary formation, and I was talking to the teens about this weekend, but these things, these kind of four pillars of formation, as he terms them, they can be implemented into anyone's lives, and I think they should be an integrated human being. And one of those elements is human formation. And so if I can give a hot take, I think the primary motivation for being humanly formed, and we're going to talk about sort of different elements of that, but and we touched on this, but the primary motivation for human formation is to be a bridge for another person to encounter Christ, a bridge for another person to receive the gospel, and not an obstacle. And so anything that keeps us from being, like, within our humanity, being an obstacle is an area that is in need of redemption. But then, too, I think this is why the ways in which we conduct ourselves in a social setting, in a professional setting, in a family setting, whenever we're around other people, like, our actions are not arbitrary, and nor are they relative. And I know that that gets into, like, well, a lot of people who listen to this podcast probably aren't moral relativists, right? But even within the realm of like, people who are practicing Catholics, I think, like, just because you adhere to following Christ doesn't mean that you are being a fisher of men yet. And so I think your actions, even within the church, even within any way that you present yourself to others, there is a right and wrong way to go about it. There is a still more excellent way.
And, like, the world where my personality or me myself as a finished product is a really boring and, like, fantasy world, honestly. It's like I so clearly know that I'm not yet perfect. I mean, that's probably the wrong word. And I'm not yet who the Lord is creating me to be.
Yeah.
So, like, just to be convicted that you're not a finished product. And, like, if you look in the mirror and you don't see, like, Jesus, like, that's, like, that's who you're called to be, is to, right, to model his holiness, to model his life in the world. So St. Paul gives us many lists of virtues that we should be, you know, but we see it played out in the Gospels as well, as Jesus goes out and we model our lives after his.
Yeah. My spiritual director calls me out on this. He says, quit speaking in absolutes. Like, because of my personality, I will always be inclined to.
Always?
Yeah, always. Like, an absolute such as always, you know? And he's saying, like, Jesus desires to redeem these things, you know? And your specific personality is actually a gift that the Lord has given you. It's a tool to be able to reach certain people that others might not be able to reach. And so there are certain elements of what, like, who am I actually created to be versus what's just something I've constructed about myself, I guess.
Do you mean, like, absolutes as in I'll always be this, or it will never be that way, or I'm only that, or it's only this?
So your homily this weekend, Father's homily, he shared with all of the faithful of St. Clair that he has a propensity to not be gentle.
Yeah.
And so an absolute would say, you know that about yourself, or that your tongue cuts like a knife, or whatever you said, and you have more of an abrasive personality initially because you're choleric. And so an absolute would be the mindset that, well, that's just how I am. I'm always going to be someone who, like, can't receive people well.
Yep.
And it's like, that's actually not true.
Right.
So I think the temptation is to say, when we hear these things that we're going to talk about, well, that's just not how I am. But it's like, well, no, that's the point.
Well, here's another, like, thing to throw in there as the wind blows. I know that about myself, but I'm not sure how many people are caught up in the world of self-knowledge. And I think we brought this up before, is that, like, well, it was so revolutionary when you started walking with purpose. Did we bring this up on the podcast? Is that when you all came back and, like, I know my root sin now.
This comes up every podcast.
Everyone should know their root sin.
Oh, I don't know what yours is. Well, I could probably guess. But like, you could guess anything. But it's, I think that growing in self-knowledge is a huge component of human formation. Because I had formators at the seminary who would point things out to me that they observed. Well, that's not how the world works, you know. So you can go on living and, like, hurting people, honestly, without knowing it. And, like, maybe the Lord's calling you to more.
Yeah.
So that's where, like, growing in self-knowledge is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Not just looking at your behaviors, but the motivations and intentions underneath them.
Sure.
Get to the root of it.
Exactly.
I'm with you. Okay, so this idea came about because you guys had mentioned wanting to speak about sarcasm. So what does sarcasm have to do with, or our speech, what does that have to do with human formation?
Shana.
Sarcasm has a horrible definition. I can't remember what it is now, but it's pretty much you're cutting the person down when you talk in sarcasm, whoever you're talking to, like slicing at them.
Two Greek words.
Like it's cut the flesh.
Yeah, to cut the flesh.
Yeah, to cut the flesh. And I use sarcasm a lot, not thinking.
Walking around
because
with
it's knives. it's like I'm like, I'm just kidding. But that can actually hurt people, or you say it's a joke, but they're like, that's not a joke, is it? Yeah. And so just keeping in mind that our words, things that we say, should embody Christ, like be more Christ-like, mm-hmm. and not use sarcasm, because it's not nice.
Right.
Life Teen has sort of, I'm going to mention this before, but when they send missionaries to their Life Teen camps over the summers, they go through missionary training for a week or two. And one of the things that they coach these college kids on before they go to minister to high schoolers is sort of the three poisons of community, as they call them.
Oh, wow.
One is gossip. The other, I can't remember. And the third one is sarcasm.
Oh, really?
And when they say poison of community, they mean like if you want a really fast way to be divisive and to split people apart and make people feel unloved and unwelcome,
yep.
Without you even realizing it, it's gossip and yep. sarcasm and mm-hmm. something else.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know when sarcasm became really abrasive for me. I started recognizing kind of how ironic people's humor had been. I think I mentioned this on the podcast a few weeks ago. There's a girl I met who wore a hat or something that mm-hmm. said, "Be a nice human" on it. And that's like, that's the epitome of ironic humor to me. It's like, it's funny because it's so obvious, but you, and it's ridiculous that you would put it on a hat. It like just, it's dripping in irony. And it irks me. Like I sort of get the humor of it, but I think it undercuts a lot.
Sure.
And so sarcasm kind of does the same thing, where there's this opportunity to say something that's sincere and true, and you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where like it sucks air out of the room. And what you're talking about when you use it is it just confuses, honestly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And in this past year and a half, especially, if I've learned anything about humans, it's that we don't like to be in a state of confusion, like where we don't know what our footing is and where we stand. We don't like to be confused. And I think human formation wise, if you're leaving people in a state of confusion, then you are an obstacle to people meeting Jesus. You're not sure. A bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's even like a name for an evil spirit, is like the spirit of confusion, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's when it comes to sarcasm or even like the way you speak, the human element of speaking, what you have the opportunity to bring into the world through speech, is so much more than just being kind, or just not being mean, because there are real like ways to be sarcastic that are self-deprecating, mm-hmm. which don't really hurt other people. Or there are ways to be sarcastic that are, they're not necessarily like directed towards the other person in a malicious way. It's just like you're sort of dry, humored or sarcastic. But the whole thing is that like sarcasm almost puts it's actually a really insecure posture. Like it cuts the yep. other person. And so it puts a barrier between you and that person that they might not actually, your real feelings or thoughts towards something
it's
might not be
defensive.
Revealed.
It's yeah. very defensive.
Yeah. Which, so it's not that Jesus wants to come and redeem your sarcasm. He wants mm-hmm. to come and redeem that which you are afraid to show other people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The areas of your own insecurity that if you let your wall down there, or if you say a nice word and it isn't received, like that's hurtful towards you, mm-hmm. you know, like yeah. you have the possibility of being wounded. So yeah, I don't know if there's any instances of sarcasm in the Gospels, but I bet those guys were clowns.
I can't think of one. Well,
you said this the other day though, that Jesus probably almost never used sarcasm.
Well, I don't think he would have. Can anything good come from Nazareth? would be like the closest thing.
Yeah. But that's before he was bought in.
But it also could have actually been extremely sincere without sarcasm. We think it's funny.
Yeah.
It's funny. There's irony there, which is like, that's actually good irony. Generally speaking, that's still good irony, because it's like, with the historical lens of Jesus being the savior of the world and Nathaniel not yet knowing that, it was like, well, of course something good can come from Nazareth. You're literally standing in front of goodness himself.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the kind of the humor of it.
Sure. I do love that line.
Not to, dissecting jokes is like the lamest thing ever.
We'll just say he wasn't joking.
Let me tell you why it's funny.
Oh, man.
But yeah, I think it just comes down to being your authentic self. It's where you first, like he said, got to be self-knowledgeable of your words, your actions.
Yeah.
Before you can really...
And your insecurities, too. I think that's where the... that's the biggest place that sarcasm comes in, is that you use it as a defense to hide. You can use it that way.
When I first noticed that my sarcastic tendency... I'm the youngest of four, so you gotta, like... You gotta have some weapons growing up. But when I first noticed that it was an issue was in college, when you would encounter more people who are very different than you, you know? Some which were more pure and more holy, a lot of which. And I started to realize that, like, it was an issue because it wasn't just my same group of people that were finding it funny because we're all insecure. It was like I would talk to someone and say something sarcastic. Again, not intentionally malicious, but it was met with, like, the confusion of purity, in the sense that, like, they actually didn't know what I was meaning by the way that I said it and the words that I said, because it didn't align with what is true. And that was like an awkward social situation. And at first I was like, these people just don't understand humor. But then it's like, no, actually, I can't have a normal conversation about anything that's real, because I'm just like looking for a quick word, quick wit thing.
Think about the times when I find myself in that situation. I laugh and I'm like, wait, are you serious?
Yeah.
Are you kidding? I don't know.
That's the confusion piece.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm
like,
ooh. Gross.
What is it?
A moth or something.
It's dead.
We're out here in the elements. Having said that, on Saturday morning, I was reading the petitions at Mass, and I opened up the petition book, and there's a spider sitting on it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Talk about spiritual warfare.
I just flicked it off. And I look up at Joe Martin. He's like, he was very confused.
Oh, man.
So Alyssa was kind of unpacking the idea of human formation with the teens on Saturday. I missed that. But is there anything in particular that stuck out or that they responded to well?
So, yeah, that was sort of a grab bag of individuals. I didn't know exactly how to address them, because some of them have been going to talks at the seminary, you know, and so they're already sort of familiar with these pillars of formation. And some of them are freshman girls who are, this is like a brand new conversation, you know. So it was a little bit all over the place in terms of these different pillars of formation. But I shared with them the same concept that in order to be a bridge and not an obstacle, things about us need to change, oftentimes, because we're all in need of redemption, again, like I said. But there were, initially when I said, if you consider like your human physical presence in the world, what are ways in which you think that you could share the gospel with others simply by just the way that you act or speak or dwell within a space?
Sure.
And so there was a lot of thoughts, like, some people were saying, like, you know, being compassionate, and some people were saying, like, well, if you pray. And so they were kind of getting it, but it was, those things would fall under various pillars, I suppose. So then it took some prompting for me to ask them, like, let me ask you this. When you stay up really late after practice studying for a test, or staying up late doing homework, and you go to school the next day after going to bed at 3 a.m., how are you towards your friends that next day?
Yeah.
And they Crabby. Said, like, awful. Like, I'm really exhausted and I don't feel good. And I'm not kind. Like, I'm not able to talk to my friends or give them advice, you know? And so it was just kind of teasing out that idea of, because you're a human being who has human needs, and sleep is one of them. Mm-hmm. And that's a really big one. And getting enough sleep at night is a human component of how you are then able to receive others when you're tired, when you're frustrated, or so that was just one element that we touched on, was like, I mean, there are so many. Do you want me to?
I mean, I don't know what's relevant about what you spoke about, so it's up to you.
I think that's, well, okay, so.
One of the things that I'm thinking about is just like people's charisms. You guys have talked about charisms without me a lot, I think, on the podcast, so I don't know what you've actually said, but. Because I actually don't listen to the episodes I'm not part of. however, your charism is not for you. Like, God gives charisms for other people. So if intercessory prayer is a charism of yours, it means that you're supposed to intercede for others. If hospitality is a charism of yours, it means that you're supposed to welcome people into your home, into a welcoming space. If prophecy is a charism of yours, then like you are to speak good things into the lives of other people, and to introduce them into the idea of like that the Lord loves them. Like, it's not for you, it's for the Lord. So I have no doubt that the Lord has or is giving you a charism, but you can cover that up because of your own deficiencies of personality or something like that. A huge part of that is sin. But then it's also just like playing into the worst parts of yourself and saying like, well, I'm fated to this. You know, it's the sort of absolute thing that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just an acerbic person and kind of a jerk to my friends, so therefore I can't be hospitable. It's like, well, no.
That would be confusing.
Yeah.
It's like, if you're really mean.
Let's identify that as a place of conversion, and this is maybe the next part of the conversation. Once you've identified this, how do you go forward? You know, like, how are you, it's human formation. If you consider yourself like a clay pot that's not yet formed completely, how do you kind of restart with this material and be reformed, you know?
Yeah. Before we ask those questions.
Sure.
Could I run through this list and you guys can just riff and see what your thoughts are?
Yes. What's the list?
Okay. So speech, we covered that. These are in my brain, just like different exterior realities of human formation. Okay.
Okay.
Speech.
Speech. Done. Sarcasm, not being abrasive, speaking truth and love, all those things.
Okay.
The next one is sleep. Okay. So getting enough sleep at night. I sort of just spoke about that.
Yep.
There's a story, I think Father Hazing told this when he did the parish mission here, but that one of his confessees or something, like he gave her his penance for Lent. The thing that he undertook, his Lenten observance, was to get 8 hours of sleep a night.
Nice.
And that was like putting to death the deadly, you know, like you're exhausted and can't be a good father, you know. So sleep. The next one was temperance with food and drink. And I think if there's sort of a chief virtue of human formation, temperance might be it. That's a hot take too, but
what's the word? Sobriety as well, but not in the just the drunken sense. Yeah,
yeah, being able to see the world clearly.
You. Oh, I know. Focus/you use the word excellence for temperance a lot of the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Different things, but temperance for sure is huge.
So how would temperance with food and drink specifically? Why is that an element of human formation?
Well,
because if you
there's a lot there. Go ahead.
If you over, like, eat and drink, you're just kind of like can't think clearly, or you're obsessing over, oh my gosh, I can't believe I just did that, and you're not thinking more like God loves me, and you know.
I get hangry.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get hungry. I get hangry. Like, there's a certain threshold. If by 2 o'clock I've not eaten lunch, I don't feel good about myself or other people, really.
I don't feel good about you.
So I need food, you know.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then, like, to the other extreme.
If I have too much food, I'm like just worried about myself, you know.
Well, you're a blob, like you don't feel good.
Yeah, yeah. Or you just like want to go to bed.
Mm-hmm. Sidebar: the teens, when we were talking about this weekend, brought up that story.
they fabricate that story.
I don't think they do. I was their father.
Jack does.
No,
he does. I did not mean it for him.
What's the story?
Father was talking to the eighth graders last year and
about
building virtue, and he made a comment about what happens if you eat one Snickers bar.
No, 1,000 Snickers bars.
Okay, and then he called out one of the high schoolers and was like, Jack, won't you tell us?
No, that was it.
The word whale was thrown in there.
I said, is it okay to eat one Snickers bar? Is that a good thing? It's like, yeah, that's a good thing. You know, like, you
it's okay to eat 1,000?
If you eat 1,000 Snickers bars, like, what kind of person do you become? And they're like, I don't know, fat? I said, you become a whale. You become a whale. That's what you become. I said, isn't that right, Jack? And I didn't mean it like that.
The tongue cuts like a knife, folks.
I didn't mean it like that at all.
You just wanted the star student to answer is what you wanted?
He was like beaming ear to ear, and I was looking for some affirmation back.
Again, sarcasm is a place of insecurity.
It wasn't sarcastic. It was earnest.
I'm never eating lunch with you again.
I don't stab people in the back. I stab them right in the front.
While they're smiling.
While they're smiling.
Brutal.
Oh my gosh. So that was kind of a fun conversation as I'm standing at the whiteboard, is trying to heal wounds that the father has inflicted.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on from temperance, food and drink. I think we kind of get that.
That's a tough one.
Mental and emotional health.
Why are you looking at me?
Can I say something about the drinking thing too?
Please do.
There's obvious problems with over drinking, but what I find more of is the always looking for a good time type of mentality, like what St. Paul calls party spirit, and he uses it negatively. So like, that's where sometimes with adults, I think we can fall into that. It's like we don't know how to have a serious conversation with each other because we've only grown together because we party together, or we only have good times together. So when it comes time to talk about serious things more soberly, we hide behind little defenses that we create. Mm. So that's kind of where, like, and I think about this a lot. How, even like with the young adults, like how do we hang out together without having alcohol, you know? And alcohol works. It like brings people along, but can we do this? Can we hang out without having alcohol? So alcohol in itself, like I'm totally cool with it, but like we just need, it shouldn't always be this go-to thing, sure. You know?
I think to just affirm though, what you're doing with the young adults, I don't think you guys are abusing alcohol in any capacity, but I get what you're saying with the overconsumption for whatever reason. I think also the escapism mentality of, and this can go for food too, like, do you emotionally eat, you know? Like, that's not using food to its proper end.
Yeah.
And you see this all the time on college campuses, but the, like, I just had a bad grade on a test, like, let's go get drunk mentality, or mm-hmm. I just got broken up with, let's go get drunk, you know, just escaping problems. But
yeah,
it's a good word.
So what was it?
Mental and emotional health.
Oh, that's the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mental and emotional health.
Why it's important to human formation. Mm.
Mm. Why it's important for you being a bridge.
Mm-hmm. Because if you're not stable, you can't help lead people closer.
Yeah, if you weren't a stable bridge, I wouldn't I wouldn't cross a canyon. You know?
You're right.
Yeah. More practically, I think if you consider, like, someone comes to you with an opportunity to share Jesus with them, whether it's someone in their life just passed away or there's something going on and you have the opportunity to like share the good news with them in a really normal and natural capacity, but you yourself can't even emotionally function because you haven't worked through your own sort of mm-hmm. history or past, you're not going to be able to receive them in the way that Jesus would receive them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one element of it.
In this realm, I would also put addictions, and one of the most prevalent addictions I think people have is to their phones. And one way that, like, at least Alcoholics Anonymous talks about addictions is if you, like, if the sight of alcohol or somebody drinking alcohol, if that would stir cravings in you, then that's probably a sign that you're addicted, like that you're, like, you're already wanting a drink. So, like, if your phone was across the room and you see it and, like, you go to grab it and, like, open it up just to see if somebody's texted you, it's like, okay. Like, I'm not willing
might to... have a problem.
I don't know if I'm willing to call it... Like, I don't know if it is an addiction, but to scare you, I'll say it is, you know? Like,
perhaps an attachment?
Certainly an attachment.
It's FOMO. Fear you're missing out on something.
Like, oh, yeah, oh, exactly.
Ooh. FOMO.
Yeah, FOMO.
FOMO, sorry.
That's FOMO. Good. So, I like it. Yeah, and, like, just to jump a few steps of how to work against that, you know, maybe you need to just put your phone in a drawer and say from the hour of 9 to 10 o'clock, I'm not going to look at my phone, you know.
Yeah.
And the craving is going to come to pick up your phone, but then you just have to work against that spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So why that comes up is because why I'm thinking about that, even with the teens, it's like, I'm literally talking to you and you're looking at your phone.
You're like, ah!
Like, I could be the best instrument of the gospel, but you're actually not even able to receive. Like, I could be the best bridge of the... I could be Jesus himself. And if you're looking at your phone, you're not going to be able to receive that. So, that, like, that's the kind of the two-way street thing.
Totally.
And, yeah, you can't get what you don't have. And mm-hmm. So.
I have another point on this. It has to do with self-care, but I want to get through these other ones before I mention it.
Okay.
Okay. The next one, Father mentioned this, hygiene.
Okay.
And I think this could be lumped in with, like, exercise and just the way that...
You present physically.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And then I'm not saying you have to be, like, a fitness model by any stretch, because that's unreal, but...
But if you work out, healthy, you feel better. Totally. And you have better endorphins running through, so yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
happier.
Yeah.
That's science.
Happier.
That you're happier.
Mm-hmm.
I've never... Well, I have considered smoking cigarettes before, and I like, and I never do, but I think one of the reasons I don't, among many others, so don't think I'm like about to go
it's
off
not
the
Surgeon General's warning.
Well, yeah, but I just don't think it presents well. I think it looks, I don't think it's a good image for a priest to be smoking cigarettes. You're right.
Yeah.
Shayna has acid reflux because she has not been humanly formed in what she eats. I'm just kidding.
I have gum in my mouth.
So that's like,
sure,
that's a thing. Like, I think a pre-smoking cigarettes would not be a healthy look.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, the most, like, real aspect of this that I, when I first heard about it, it was spoken to us as missionaries on a college campus. And on a college campus, you're literally, like, ministering to the Gentiles. Like, you're not the pagans.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of the words that you're saying, they're likely familiar with Jesus, the church, whatever, but they have no concept of what things mean or are a really, like, abused version of what it means. So long story short, the whole hygiene piece comes in when it's like, if you're trying to share something with someone and they're looking at you, and they are not formed to give you the benefit of the doubt or to even give you the time of day, don't allow your physical appearance, even like what you wear, to be something that mm-hmm. allows them to walk away before the words of Jesus even can have the opportunity to cross your lips, you know? And so they're not saying you have to be like a supermodel who only eats leaves and all these things or never smokes or whatever, but are you going to make someone uncomfortable by your physical presence? Mm-hmm. And sometimes we had to have conversations with people in our groups and things like that about, like, the clothes that they wear, because it was either weird, like, don't wear wool shirts, you know, or Or for more so for with women, it's like you should dress modestly.
Yep.
Which is sort of inclined towards spiritual things as well, not just human, but when it comes to being able to share things with others, if your physical appearance is a distraction, then that is something to take into account.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's just another lens through which we can see it. But
sure.
Cool. Okay. This one's a big one. Sexuality.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
Sexuality and or relationships with the opposite sex. I don't mean sexuality in the sense of like
human your preference.
Yes. I mean sexuality in the sense of like your own human sexuality. Why would that need to be
redeemed?
Yeah. Which everyone's does. But why would having that kind of in check be an element of human formation, of being a bridge to others?
You have to know what God made you?
Okay, yeah.
I mean, I have so much to say.
That's why I said this is a big one.
I thought you said self-care. I was waiting for that.
Is this part of self-care?
No, this self-care is coming up.
Look, what's the opposite of love? It's not hate, it's
use.
And to use another person for me... to use another person as a means and not an end, as a means for your own gratification and self-pleasure or whatever, like, it's an evil thing to do. So, like, you're within your, like, you don't even ever have to say a word to somebody of the opposite sex. But, like, you can objectify them. Like, Jesus says you can commit somebody, you commit adultery even by the thoughts of your heart.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's a pretty serious demon you have to slay, like a dragon that you have to slay.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this guy starts with a leaf blower. So, because it's such, one of the difficult things about sexuality, and I would love, we can talk about this forever. It's like the first commandment that God gives to Adam and Eve is be fertile and multiply. So sex is obviously a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been distorted so much that it can be used in a bad way, and everybody has experienced that, you know, like without a doubt. So a huge purification needs to happen there. Like, so just quick example, if you want to play this out, like if you can't have a conversation, like I'm speaking for a guy, if you can't have a conversation with women where you're not flirting with them, then that's an obstacle to the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a real difficult thing. Or like if you can't think about women without lusting after them, it's like that's a real problem.
Right.
Yeah.
And I would add that on the flip side of that, if you as Christians were sort of aware of this, right? Like to a certain extent, I think we're aware of it. But if you are so aware of this inclination to think lustfully or inability to not flirt with people, so much so that you avoid them, that also is a literal obstacle, because like the means by which Christ has given us to share the message, we aren't employing, because mm-hmm. it's us. So if we're avoiding people of the opposite sex just because we're fearful, maybe not that we're gonna like flirt with them, but just fearful of like saying something awkward or them not liking us or coming off as weird, like that's an element of it.
Mm.
And I would say that's a lesser element than kind of getting our passions in order. I think that has to come first, but.
And this is where like a lot of the insecurities come out. Like for women, I heard a phrase the other day, like women use sex to get love and men use love to get sex. And like, okay, well, what are you trying to cover up? What are you trying to mask? What are you trying to, what void are you trying to fill with a lot of those things? Right. So, yeah, I think that we could do a separate talk on it, but
maybe we will.
whatchamacallit? Saint. Oh gosh, who says this? I don't know which saint says it, but the church has always said that prudence is the charioteer of the virtues. I don't know if you ever heard that.
Mm.
So, like, if you imagine. Prudence is the virtue that helps guide all of the other virtues. Like all the virtues are horses, basically. Mm. Well, all your human powers are virtues, as it were. And if you have like 7 good horses and one of them is your sexuality, or if you have 7 good horses and a sleigh of 8 and the 8th one is your sexuality, he's going buck wild all the time, like, you're not going to be able to drive this chariot, mm-hmm. you know, like, there's no way.
Yeah.
Because this one horse is going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, people say, oh, I'm generally a good person. And then you've got this buck wild horse and it's going to, like, just destroy the whole thing. It's like, that can bring you down, you know, like, it's, yeah. you might generally be a good person percentage wise, if that's how we're evaluating. But like, if it's the thorn in your side, you're going to feel it all the time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to be nagging you.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, last one before my comment on self-care. Conversation skills. This sort of goes back into speech, but it is. Who was I speaking about? Matt Hogue. One of my core members I was talking to about this, just like the inability for young people to really naturally have conversation these days. And like, that's an element of being a teenager. Like, you're not. Sure. But we're talking like people our own age, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And part of it has to do with the phone and I think things like that. But even just being able to make eye contact when someone's looking at you and not be like weirded out by that, you know?
Right.
Stop staring at me.
Yeah, sort of. And those are, I think, minor. We haven't even gotten to this part where you ask them questions yet. You know, those are just sort of like physical things. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if you have any thoughts on why conversation skills or being relatable or personable would be human formation.
I don't know if I've ever shared this on here before, but...
Here we go. Uncharted waters.
One of my mentors and a priest, now a bishop, who I really respect and look up to a lot. His name is Bishop Austin Vetter. He's the Bishop of Helena, Montana. He lived down the hall from me for 3 years at the North American College. He used to give me trouble all the time. But he had once said in a conference, he said, you need to... pray to have soft eyes.
Hmm.
And this goes into like my personality, a little bit acerbic, a little bit choleric, whatever. And I think my eyes can be harsh a lot of times. And it's just like, it's what's behind them. It's like the critical,
mm-hmm.
severe things. Like I process things quickly and like make judgments on it fast. And so like, my eyes can be harsh at times. And when he said that, it was like the truest thing I'd ever heard in my life. Like, pray that the Lord give you soft eyes. And I'm like, it sounds silly, but like, when I think about Jesus, when I pray, like, Jesus doesn't have harsh eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he has really gentle eyes, soft eyes, so that he can receive me well, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think about that a lot. Eyes are the window to the soul, you know? That sort of thing, but it's actually true. So in conversation, just to round it back, is if my there have been times where like I'll be talking to Shayna and I, or anyone really, and it's like I can tell that you're thinking something, you know,
uh-huh.
And it's your eyes will say it all. So your eyes are the window to your soul,
mm-hmm.
Which is a huge part of conversation beyond just the words that you're communicating, but how your affect and everything communicates.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Huge.
Your whole body. All mm-hmm. the body signals. You have to be approachable. So I think that comes in like conversation-wise. And
yeah.
You can't talk.
Hard thing to teach, though. It's a hard thing to remedy, for sure.
So it's interesting you mentioned that, because as I was speaking to my core member about this, and he was talking about young people younger than us, I mentioned that's something that I have even had to overcome. Just like how you receive someone, keeping eye contact while they're speaking to you, all those things. But honestly, I remember specifically working on that in college, and it came as a fruit of prayer. Like it was a thing such that like, if I am to literally be Jesus, I want to be gentle in the way that you are gentle, Lord. And I know we've spoken about this, but so many people, like, it's not a natural thing for us to desire that apart from the Lord. Like, it doesn't make sense to be gentle and receptive apart from Jesus, you know? So some of that's breaching into, like, if you haven't encountered the gaze of Jesus in prayer, Do you know that what you are trying to imitate?
Yeah.
And if you haven't, maybe that's the invitation. It's like, Jesus, would you look at me? Like, I want to see you look at me, you know?
Yeah.
Which that's breaching spiritual formation, not necessarily just human form. But
yeah, like, and just imagine, like, Bartimaeus being given eyesight, and, like, the first person he sees is Jesus, and, like, Jesus' eyes are excited and, like, loving, you know? But, like, well, you can imagine that with any person in the gospel that meets Jesus. What is Jesus' face communicating?
Mm-hmm.
And then when I see people, is my face communicating the same thing or something different?
Nice. Ooh, good. Okay, this is
got
the
a lot
final.
To work on.
This is exactly me too. Honestly, this is the last sort of, I guess, bow tie that I will tie this on. And this might not make sense to anyone because I think I have a different opinion on this whole notion of self-care than others.
Oh, here we go.
But I think the whole trend or conversation surrounding self-care is actually like a rotten fruit of the lack of care we have for ourselves. Like, I don't, like, so when you hear people saying, like, I'm going to go get my nails done because self-care, or I'm going to go get a coffee because
self-care. Do people say that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great,
and
great to know.
Some people who listen might say that, and if that's the case, I do apologize. but in the same vein, I don't think we as human beings are meant to, like, spin our wheels until we have legitimately nothing left in the tank, that we reward ourselves with something fun. Like,
yeah.
I think the Lord desires that we would live an integrated life. And part of that is actually having care for yourself in all of these different elements that we mentioned, in the way, like, your amount of sleep and exercise and all these things, so that you don't need to be on E going to, like, get a quick hit of self-care.
Mm-hmm.
And this inordinate, like, emotional tie-in, like, emotional mental health tie-in of, like, that it aids my mental health. And it's like, no, he desires to redeem your mental health. He desires to heal the ways in which we are emotionally unstable, not just, like, give us a reward whenever we've hit a bad place, you know?
Sure, sure.
So that's, like, hot takes from the youth minister, and I will digress. But I really think, like, it's easy to think of these things as self-care. Like, I just need to take time to pray. Or I just need to take time to, like, work on me. And it's like, stop working on you. Allow Jesus to work on you so that you can work on others, you know, or work for others. Like Father mentioned, charisms are for others. So allow him to transform in you what needs to be transformed.
Yeah, that was one of the good parts of the gospel on Sunday, is that Jesus says, if you want to be the first of all, put yourself last to be be the servant of all.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, like, self-care flips that and says, but the trouble of self-care, if I understand what you're saying correctly, the idea is, look, I have been serving all these people, now I'm gonna get mine, you know?
Right.
Like that sort of idea. It's like, okay, so you have been working hard, you're a mom, you're a dad, you're a whatever, you're an employee or something, like, I know you've worked hard. And so then what does the I'm gonna get mine look like as far as self-care and, like, what are the motives, what are the intentions behind it?
Mm-hmm.
Are you masking something? Are you escaping something? Is it really just selfish, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe that's what you're trying to get at. Plus just finding satisfaction in the world when maybe the Lord wants to give you something else. I think that's
mm-hmm.
I think escape is something that comes up so much especially when I consider that topic.
Yeah.
Escaping mm-hmm. difficult things.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to say it. I like getting my nails done.
Oh, I don't think that's an issue at all. I don't think, please don't misunderstand. I'm not saying that if you get your nails done, it's selfish. I don't think that's true. But I think when it's used as like Father just mentioned, I'm going to go get mine. Like literally, I deserve a treat. You know, it's like, you're not a dog. Don't treat yourself like a dog. That's actually not self-care. But what if your whole of humanity was actually ordered toward good things, such that you got yours as you were sacrificing for others?
Yeah.
Like,
what if
this
you do it because you're in a good mood? Like,
that's
yeah.
fine.
Hey,
that's a good reason.
I feel great. Let's go get our nails done. Okay.
Yeah, I think this goes into the temperance is, again, the governing virtue here. And I like to try to follow the principle of feast and fast with the church. So like, we do a good combination of feasting and fasting. Mm-hmm. Fridays, like, it's a fast day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You abstain from something. Typically, it should be meat. But if it's not meat, then you need to abstain from something else. You know, it's like, on Fridays, you know, we don't feast. We try not to. But then on Sundays, yeah, feast, you know.
Mm-hmm.
On your particular saint's day, you know, like.
Go like hard.
On yeah, St. Bruno's feast day, I always have chartreuse because the Carthusians gave us.
That's also your birthday, though.
Yeah. But, you know, so there's ways to feast and fast with the church. So it's like, have a reason behind it. And not just like, maybe you are on E one particular day, but it's a Friday. And you say, you know what? Today I had said I wasn't going to have alcohol. And even though I'm drained and I'm going to go out with my friends, I'm still going to deny myself, put myself last so that I can be the servant of all. So I just, like, I don't think self-care is the worst thing in the world, but I want people to evaluate the intentions underlying it and why it's happening or what's happening.
Yeah.
Because getting your nails done is not intrinsically bad.
It's morally neutral.
But Jesus wants you to be happy. And if that makes you happy.
I think what Father's saying is that he gets his nails done on Easter.
I could use that to justify anything, though.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually probably the worst logic. No offense. Like, cut that. Because, to get a little bit philosophical, nobody chooses anything that they think is bad. Like, even for a murderer to kill someone, they're doing it because they think it would be...
Jesus wants them to be happy.
It would be a better world if this person didn't exist in this world. So they're choosing something that they think is good. Jesus wants me to be happy. I want this person to be dead. Therefore, Jesus wants me to kill this person. It's like, no, he definitely doesn't want that. And so I don't really like that logic. So that's actually a tough thing because I think people are led by that a lot. And I am too. It's like, been a hard week, Lord. You know, I'd love to unwind in an illicit way, like party spirit type of way, you know. But it's like, okay, maybe I'm not actually called to that, which is probably true.
I'm going to go get my nails done.
I'll go with you.
Okay.
That's fine.
That's good. That's a communal thing. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a market that has grown a ton, self-care. So it's probably addressing a symptom, a disease in our society. Like, as we become more secular, self-care has gone on the rise. And therefore, because the market's been placed there, I don't know. You put your finger on something that's hot. So, a few nerves.
I don't know what
live
you're
nerves.
About.
You know what I mean?
Yes, I know what you mean.
Okay. Your nails are chipping away. Any thoughts? Anything else on the list?
That's the last of my list. Do you guys have any final thoughts before I give?
I have a lot to work on.
We all do. In the realm of irony and sarcasm is cynicism as well. And I think especially because of the pandemic, people are very cynical, and which leads to cynical of situations or cynical of political atmosphere or whatever, which makes you skeptical of other people. And if you're skeptical, you can't receive people well, and therefore you can't interact well with people, you know? So if you find that within yourself, it's like, well, it's not helpful. Could be an obstacle. And probably something that the Lord wants to redeem. And so that doesn't mean, like, gleeful, naive optimism is your antidote. But Jesus says, do not be afraid, I have conquered the world.
Yeah.
So do you actually believe that the battle's been won and that the Lord is fighting for you? Or are you left to do this all on your own in a depraved generation, you know?
Yeah.
You're not alone. You're not alone.
I like it.
Mm-mm.
Wow. We covered a lot of ground there. I hope you all stuck with us.
We did.
Hopefully, yeah, I just this is like a sort of an examination of conscience almost, but like that's what human formation should be. Like let's name a few things, point a few things out so that we can begin to tackle them one at a time. We didn't even get to the like how to remedy these things, but yeah. I'd say first of all, just give like be patient with yourself. Give yourself grace. I mean, that if you've gone into the woods 5 miles, it's going to take you 5 miles to get out. So if these are things that are part of you, it's going to take a little while to purify them as well. But if you can, first of all, one thing that my former spiritual director used to say, like once you've named something, like once you can see it clearly, like it's already a promise that the Lord is giving you that he's going to bring it about. So it's like, if I recognize in myself that I become angry and impatient with other people, and that's the thing that I see it in myself. Like it's the Lord showing me that he's going to redeem it, but it's going to take time. So just to pray for that and pray, not that the Lord just give you patience, but that he give you the strength to respond in an opportunity to be patient. That's the big thing. Like he's not going to give you patience. He's going to give you opportunities to be patient.
Right.
And it's whether or not you cooperate with that opportunity, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Good. All right.
Love it.
Love it.
It's great.
Well, we'll see you next time.
Yeah.
Here on The Catholic Arsonist.
Bye.
Bye.